The next example we will look at is Paul of Samosata. In the middle of the 2nd century, the bishop of Antioch was Paul of Samosata. He turned out to be a heretic against the Christian faith. He corrupted the truths of the Trinity and the Incarnation. In 269, Paul of Samosata was deposed from his see at Antioch by a council of bishops and priests. What's interesting is that Eusebius, in his Ecclesiastical History, Book 7, Chapter 30, says the following, quote, "Paul had fallen from the episcopate as well as from the Orthodox faith. But as Paul refused to surrender the church building, the emperor Aurelian was petitioned, and he decided the matter most equitably, ordering the building to be given to those to whom the bishops of Italy and the city of Rome should adjudge it." End quote. That can be found in Nicene and Post-Nicene Fathers, 2nd Series, Volume 1, page 316. So in this quote, we see that Eusebius tells us that the emperor transferred the church building which Paul had occupied to those who were approved by the Church of Rome. This is especially interesting because Antioch is in the east. That means that there were many bishops in the east, such as the Bishop of Jerusalem, to whom the emperor could have gone about the issue of the building. But no, the emperor put the building under the authority of the Roman Church, even though Rome was much farther away. He recognized that the Church of Rome had the jurisdiction over the universal church. Other things could be covered in the 3rd century, but we must proceed to the 4th century. Just as we saw in the earlier centuries, in the 4th century there are many well-known citations from the fathers of the church, such as Afratis, Ephrem, Basil, Hilary, Gregory Nazianzen, etc., which make it clear that Peter was the prime apostle and the rock upon which the church was built. These citations can be found without too much trouble by anyone who searches them out. But without question, the most important event in the 4th century was the Council of Nicaea in 325. The Council of Nicaea condemned the heresy of Arius. This heresy denied the full divinity of Jesus Christ. The Council of Nicaea, which was summoned by the Emperor Constantine, is universally recognized as the first general or ecumenical council of the Christian Church. It is accepted not only by Catholics, but also by the so-called Eastern Orthodox and by many Protestants. In Canon 6 of the famous Council of Nicaea, we read the following, quote, "The ancient customs of Egypt, Libya, and Pentapolis shall be maintained, according to which the Bishop of Alexandria has authority over all of those places, since a similar custom exists with reference to the Bishop of Rome." End quote. Much has been written about what this canon means. Exactly what it implies is not totally clear. It could be understood to mean that the Bishop of Rome has authority over his neighboring churches. So too should the Bishop of Alexandria, since he is a very important bishop, have authority over his neighboring churches. The second interpretation is that the Council of Nicaea should acknowledge that the Bishop of Alexandria has authority over its surrounding churches, because it is the custom of the Bishop of Rome to acknowledge this jurisdiction of Alexandria. The important point to take from this is that no matter which way one looks at the canon, we can see the primacy of Rome. For it shows that the Bishop of Rome provides the model and/or the justification for the jurisdiction of the Bishop of Alexandria. And at this period of the Church, the Bishop of Alexandria was the second most important bishop in the Church. Rome was first, Alexandria second, Antioch third, and Jerusalem fourth. It was later on that the Bishop of Constantinople rose to second rank among the episcopal chairs in the Church. So, at the very least, this canon shows that the Bishop of Rome, as the prime bishop, stands at the center of how other important bishops were allowed to operate. And we must emphasize that even though the Bishop of Rome was the prime bishop and had supreme jurisdiction in the Church, as we will continue to see, the authority of other bishops in their respective territories played a crucial role, especially in the early Church. For in the early Church, communication over long distances was obviously much more difficult than it is today. From a practical standpoint, it would have been virtually impossible for the Bishop of Rome to oversee all decisions, judgments, etc., that were made in far-off lands or even hundreds of miles away. This difficulty was compounded in times of persecution, when secular authorities put the clamp down on the activities of bishops and churches. So this is why, especially in the early centuries, we see an emphasis on the authority of various bishops in their respective territories, with the authority of the Bishop of Rome over all being emphasized and coming into play occasionally and when necessary. In Matthew 18:18, we saw that Jesus gave the power to bind and to loose to all of the apostles. This represents the power he gave to the bishops of the Catholic Church to rule the church in their respective territories. But Jesus only gave the keys to St. Peter, because all of the bishops must be in union with and under the keys possessed only by the Bishop of Rome. Therefore, God and the Church relied more on the various bishops to rule their respective territories in these early centuries, with the Bishop of Rome's authority being invoked on important matters. That's why this canon and others of this period lay out the authority of the Bishop of Alexandria and other bishops, but again with reference to the Bishop of Rome. It's also a fact that 318 fathers, composed of bishops, priests, etc., were present at the Council of Nicaea. The reigning pope at the time was Pope Saint Sylvester. Pope Sylvester was not present at the Council of Nicaea, but he was represented by his legates, two Roman priests named Vito and Vincent. The presiding bishop at the Council of Nicaea was also a Western cleric, Osius of Cordova in Spain. Scholars of various denominations agree that Osius of Cordova, who led the proceedings, and the two Roman priests, Vito and Vincent, were the first to sign the council documents. Some believe that Osius presided at the council because he was a trusted advisor to the pope. In fact, Gelasius of Cyzicus, who was a 5th century historian and priest in the East, wrote that Osius, quote, held the place of Sylvester of Rome, together with the Roman presbyters Vito and Vincent, end quote, found in Ming Greek Fathers, Volume 85, 1229. So think about this. Why would the names of two Roman priests, Vito and Vincent, appear on the council documents before all of the other bishops? The answer to this question is that the priests were the representatives of the Bishop of Rome. The fact that they signed above the bishops shows us again the primacy and superior authority of the Bishop of Rome. It's also important to mention that with very ancient manuscripts, it's common for variations to exist. This is true in the case of the Council of Nicaea. Most manuscripts which contain the canons of the Council of Nicaea have 20 canons, but there exists an Arabic version of the canons which contains more than 20. Canon 39 of the Arabic version of the canons of the Council of Nicaea states the following about the primacy of the Bishop of Rome. It refers to the, quote, primacy of the Bishop of Rome over all. It also says, quote, he who holds the seat of Rome is the head and prince of all patriarchs, inasmuch as he is first, as was Peter, to whom power is given over all Christian princes and over all their peoples and over the whole Christian church. And whoever shall contradict this is excommunicated by the synod. Let there be only 4 patriarchs in the whole world, as there are 4 writers of the gospel, and let there be a prince and chief over them, the Lord of the See of the Divine Peter at Rome, as the apostle commanded, end quote. In this canon, we clearly see that the Bishop of Rome is the head of the church and has supreme jurisdiction in the church. This canon can be found in versions of the councils which are sold even by the so-called Eastern Orthodox. For instance, this quote can be found in Volume 14, page 48 of Nicene and Post-Nicene Fathers' Second Series, which is sold by Eastern Orthodox seminaries. So, the undisputed first general council of the Christian Church, the Council of Nicaea, demonstrates for us in various ways the primacy of the Bishop of Rome. Later on, we will look at the other councils and see how they also prove Catholic teaching on the papacy and the Bishop of Rome. But the next example we will look at is the Council of Sardica in 343. The Council of Sardica was a council which took place in the East shortly after the Council of Nicaea. This council met in 343 to examine the case of St. Athanasius and others. It was presided over by Osius of Cordova, the same cleric who presided at the Council of Nicaea. In addition to vindicating St. Athanasius, the Council of Sardica clearly set forth the supreme authority of the Bishop of Rome. This is especially significant because this was a council which took place in the East shortly after Nicaea. It was also received by many in the East as of ecumenical authority because its canons were later reaffirmed by the Council of Trullo in the 7th century. In Canons 3, 4, and 5 of Sardica, we see that the Bishop of Rome is the final authority in the Church. Council of Sardica, Canon 3, 343, quote, if any bishop loses the judgment in some case, and still believes that he has not a bad but a good case, in order that the case may be judged anew, let us honor the memory of the Apostle Peter by having those who have given the judgment write to Julius, bishop of Rome, so that if it seem proper he may himself send arbiters and the judgment may be made again by the bishops of a neighboring province." End quote. Canon 4 of the Council of Sardica, quote, "If any bishop be deposed by the sentence of these neighboring bishops, and assert that he has a fresh matter in defense, a new bishop is not to be settled in his see, unless the bishop of Rome judge and render a decision as to this," end quote. We see here that the bishop of Rome clearly has the final judgment as the supreme authority. Canon 5 of Sardica teaches in a similar way on the authority of the bishop of Rome. This proves that there was no doubt about the supreme jurisdiction of the bishop of Rome, even in the East at this early period of the Church. Keep in mind that this council took place decades before the final compilation of the canon of the New Testament. And all of these facts that I'm covering, such as the Council of Sardica, can be verified in books written by people of various denominations. It's not like one will find these canons, which demonstrate Catholic teaching on the papacy, only in books written by Catholics. Next, we will look at St. Athanasius. After St. Athanasius was unlawfully deposed as Bishop of Alexandria by Arian heretics, he came to Rome and to the Pope of the time, Pope Julius, around 340. Julius wrote a letter to the Eusebians at Antioch about the matter. This letter was quoted by St. Athanasius himself in Apologia Contra Arianos, Chapter 2. The passage which St. Athanasius quotes is quite enlightening on the matter of papal and Roman authority. St. Athanasius quoting Pope Julius. Pope Julius writes, quote, "And why was nothing said to us concerning the Church of the Alexandrians in particular? Are you ignorant that the custom has been for word to be written first to us, and then for a just decision to be passed from this place? If then any such suspicion rested upon the bishop there, notice thereof ought to have been sent to the church of this place. For what we have received from the blessed apostle Peter, that I signify to you." End quote. In this letter, which Athanasius quotes and endorses, Pope Julius makes reference to the tradition that the bishop of Rome constitutes the supreme court, the final authority, the bishop whose authority can trump decisions by other bishops. This shows us again that the bishop of Rome has a primacy of jurisdiction over the universal church. The next example we will look at comes from the Roman emperors of the same period. In the year 380, the emperors Gratian and Theodosius issued an edict of uniformity which abolished the toleration of Arianism. This edict, which was issued when Pope Damasus was bishop of Rome, also stated, quote, "We will that all peoples who are ruled by the authority of our clemency shall hold to the religion which the divine apostle Peter delivered to the Romans, and which is recognized by his having preserved it there until the present day, and which it is known that the pontiff Damasus follows." End quote. Citation can be found in Lao Church History, page 123. So this edict from the year 380 shows us that emperors, both in the East and the West, acknowledged that the Roman Church succeeded to St. Peter's faith and authority, and that its bishop is the prime bishop and supreme guardian of the faith. It should also be pointed out that when certain citations refer to Peter or another apostle as divine, it is not to assert that he is God. Traditionally, the word divine has been attributed to those whose authority comes from God or whose work is involved with the study of God. For instance, theologians were traditionally sometimes called divines. The next example we will look at comes from the aforementioned Pope St. Damasus himself in the year 382. In the decree of Damasus III, dated 382, the Bishop of Rome says this, quote, "Likewise it is decreed that it ought to be announced that the Roman Church has been placed at the forefront, not by the conciliar decisions of other churches, but has received the primacy by the evangelic voice of our Lord and Savior, who says, 'You are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it, and I will give to you the keys of the kingdom of heaven.' The first see, therefore, is that of Peter the Apostle, that of the Roman Church, which has neither stain nor blemish nor anything like it." End quote. In this, quote, we see that the Bishop of Rome in 382 clearly acknowledges the supreme jurisdiction which he possessed from Peter as Bishop of the Roman Church. So we saw that even the councils in the East from this period acknowledged it, that the emperors both in the East and the West acknowledged it, and that the Pope of the time himself acknowledged the jurisdiction and supreme authority of the Bishop of Rome. In this citation from Pope Damasus, we also see the roots of papal infallibility, when he says that the Roman Church has neither stain nor blemish.